I took an oath to sacrifice my life for the people. I'm a sun dancer. I took that oath with the sun dancer, and I would die for the people if I had to, but I was not going to turn against my people. So I stayed that defiant all the 49 years plus in prison.
You're listening to Undertold Verbatim. I'm Simeon Lancaster from the Undertold Stories Project. When we report for the PBS NewsHour, we capture hours of fascinating interviews, but only a few minutes ever make the broadcast. This podcast brings you the voices behind those stories, unfiltered and in their own words. Today, we're diving into a conversation with Indigenous rights activist Leonard Peltier. To many supporters, Leonard Peltier is a political prisoner, unjustly punished for his activism with the American Indian Movement. To his critics, particularly within the FBI, he's a remorseless killer of two FBI agents 50 years ago, a charge he denies. We met him at his home on the Turtle Mountain Reservation in North Dakota, 9 months after President Biden commuted his sentence. A quick heads up, this episode contains some explicit language.
Well, Leonard Peltier, you've been generous to let us into your house.
That's our correspondent, Fred DeSam Lazaro.
How does it feel, almost a half century later, to be in surroundings like this?
I guess the most simple way to answer it, and the most quick way, is I'd say it's about a million times better than living in a cell. It's decorated the way I want it to be, with Indian artifacts and paintings. And when you walk into my home, you'll know you're in a native home. And that's what I wanted to live in, and here it is.
Talk about the material comforts of having a home, the trivial stuff that you appreciate that you did not have for 50 years.
Well, living in this type of home, there's no comparison from living in a prison cell than coming to something like this. There is no comparison. Although I'm still having dreams about prison. I just had one the other day. I can't identify the prisons that I have in my dreams.
There's a lasting psychological impact from imprisonment, and still, real restrictions. He can't travel more than 100 miles from home, and visitors are limited. But Peltier says he's grateful to be back on the Turtle Mountain Reservation, a piece of land where his journey began. It was here, in the 1950s, that he learned firsthand how federal policies shaped Native life when he was sent to a local boarding school.
When we walked into the school, first of all, I should mention that they stripped us down, all of our clothes. They went to the barbershop first, had all of our hair buzz cut off. Then we would go to the shower, strip all of our clothes off, and we'd get into the shower, and we would have to scrub down with brushes that you scrub the floors with, and big old bars of we used to call them government soap. They were brown, big old floors. So that's stuff they used to use to wash, clean the cement floors. So we had to scrub and all that. And then we come out of there, we'd be inspected with, they'd have big stacks of white towels and a big old gallon jug of Vaseline. They would put it on our inner arms here and our heels. They take that towel, and if there's not dirt, but dead skin, they would spin us around, slap us on the ass with that ruler, and sent back into the shower to scrub our arms some more.
The abuse, Peltier says, was built into the curriculum.
It would take us young kids like that, and they would start indoctrinating us into the white culture and education, whatever you want to call it. they start training us not to speak or teaching us or whatever you want to call it, brutalizing us really was the answer, the correct answer to that. And to speak in our language, praying in our culture, our religion, I mean, or anything culturally. And they would be very brutal about it because some of us would refuse to give that up and we would be beaten.
Abuse, Peltier says, that only served to nurture a spirit of defiance.
We would sneak behind the gymnasium and we would basically above a whisper or sing our songs or talk some Indian. I learned a number of different languages, tribal languages, greetings and goodbyes and whatever. We all did. We shared stuff like that. And of course, as in all schools, you have your, what we used to call teachers' pets, and they would go snitch on us and we would get punished. And sometimes when we continued to be rebellious about it, we would get beaten. We would get the hell beat out of us. Yeah.
Years later, living with his father after leaving the boarding school, Peltier says he returned home to find a new threat to his people, termination. The U.S. government policy sought to end the federal recognition of and support for Native nations, support that had been guaranteed by treaties in exchange for vast amounts of land. Nearly all those nations were already deeply impoverished.
They told us that we had to leave. So a lot of them went to major cities that gave us a list of where we could go. And they were sending us all over from Seattle, Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago. They were splitting us all up. What happened was one little girl died, malnutrition. She died from malnutrition, and that upset everybody that was here. And they started organizing. One day I was listening to what's going on. I was always kind of interested in that, though. I used to go to tribal meetings and sit back there and listen to what was going on and stuff. And I learned a lot. When before my grandfather died, him and the elders would be sitting up against a wall in our log cabin. They'd be talking politics and stuff. So I used to sit out there and listen to them. I didn't understand a lot of it because I was very young. But I don't know why I was interested. I would just sit there and listen. But I always ran, got them water to drink or coffee, whatever. If we had coffee, we made coffee. We didn't hear. That was a rare occasion, too. So something was there that got my interest. Then they come to Turtle Mountains here and said, "You've been terminated. You have to accept termination. And we've given you opportunities to be relocated. Now you just have to leave." So my father and his generation became very angry and very upset and told them, you come here and you take all our land from Minnesota into Montana and you call it in 1863 and you call it the 10 cents acre treaty. And you said our land was only worth 10 cents. And it was filled with minerals, farmland, and cattle land, and all this stuff, grazing lands, and worth trillions and trillions of dollars. And then you tell us only it's only worth 10 cents acre. Now you want to come and take the rest of this. What's here that you want? That's got to be something here you want. And we're not going to let you have it. We're going to fight you. I was only 13. I was listening to those. I became politicized that way, I guess.
In 1970, after several high-profile protests, President Nixon effectively ended the termination policy, telling Congress that it was, quote, morally and legally unacceptable, unquote, and called for an era of self-determination for Native tribes. Turtle Mountain was spared, and most of the tribes that had been terminated regained their federal status. But for Peltier, a teenager entering high school, his fight was only beginning.
I graduated from the eighth grade and I was going into the ninth grade, and I didn't have any clothes to go to school with. And my shoes had soles that had holes in them, and I used to put cardboard in them, and that just lasted very little, 1 day, maybe 2 days, whatever, and they would wear out, so I'd have to put another sole made of cardboard. And so I said, well, I kept hearing that Flanders, South Dakota was a good school. So I was talking to some of the older kids, and I was asking them about Flanders. I said, how is it in Flanders? They said, it's a good school, good school. I said, but how did they treat you? Did they treat you like in the boarding school, like Wapton? He said, hell no. If I could lay a hand on me, I'll beat the shit out of the bastards. They don't do that up there, Leonard. We're all grown up now.
Peltier enrolled at the Flandreau Indian School in South Dakota, where, once again, he and his fellow Indigenous students found themselves as targets.
Some senior come down. We were all sitting around in the chairs and stuff. He said, listen up. There is a gang of white kids coming around here, grabbing the Indian, grabbing the girls on the way to the movie, or in the movies, or in the soda shop. They're taking them out in the country, and they're raping them, and they're beating them, and leaving them out there to die, because it was fall time, and it gets very, very cold out there. Raymond Yellow Thunder, same thing, tortured him and put him in a trunk of the car in the fall time. He froze to death. And Raymond never committed no crimes. He was just an Indian. And these are the type of things that were going on in Indian country, all over the country now, not just South Dakota. In Flagstaff, Arizona, the figure I've always been told was 9 natives, Navajo people were killed, their heads smashed in with boulders, rocks. Nobody would investigate it. I mean, this is what we were up against. This is why we were fighting so hard.
Law enforcement, he says, often refused to get involved when crimes were committed against Native people, especially when the offenders were connected to wealthy ranch families in the area.
We have no other choice but to stand up for our people somehow. Somebody had to do it. So that was our job in ninth graders. We escorted the girls to the movies and the soda shop, and then we escorted them back. Nothing ever happened on our watch, because we were watching. We were watching close. We were hoping that these fuckers would show up.
Peltier's life soon became rooted in Indigenous causes. He joined demonstrations for fishing and hunting rights and enforcement of treaty laws while picking up carpentry and construction skills. He floated between jobs, reservations, and Native movements, opening his eyes to the conditions facing Indigenous communities across the country.
One of the things I learned and seen and witnessed, I traveled around to many different reservations, and they were all the same. I thought it was just us that lived in that poverty. I thought, because I keep hearing, oh man, those Indians over there are wealthy and rich and living and buying new homes and new cars. And that's what we kept hearing. So that the strategy was to get us to dislike other tribes, right? Thinking they're more privileged than us. I mean, they even did that to us here in Belcourt area, district, Dunseat District. We hated each other. Some of them are first cousins. What the hell we hate each other for? But that's the way they separated us. They had us separated from different reservations, even within our own. I noticed that as I was traveling around to those reservations, they were just as bad off as we are. They were just as, even worse. So when I got to Pine Ridge, after I joined American Indian Movement, when I got to Pine Ridge, I seen some of the most poverty that you could even imagine in America, the beautiful America of the wealth, and oh my God, they're gonna, we do better than anybody in the world, or everybody here is living in great wealth and all this shit. That's what we were learning in school. We were better than anybody else in the world. And they saved us. We were not but savages. And that was what we were being taught. That's what we were being hating ourselves. We're growing up hating ourselves.
By then, Peltier joined the American Indian Movement, armed, self-described warriors who intervened to advocate for Native rights. Like the Black Panthers and other civil rights groups of the time, AIM drew the attention of the FBI, particularly on the Pine Ridge Reservation. In 1973, about 200 AIM members took over the town of Wounded Knee on Pine Ridge to protest what they called a corrupt tribal government and the U.S. government's failure to honor treaties with Native peoples.
Oh, how come they become rich? How come they got new homes? How come they got all that shit? You know, land and cattle. They were selling out. We knew that. Almost every tribal government was corrupt back in them days. That's why we went after them.
In the pockets of the BIA, in the pockets of corporate interests, is that what essentially drove you?
Yes. That's why we lost so much land. They were signing land over for, they weren't doing it for nothing. That's for goddamn sure. But all of a sudden they got nice homes, got cars, got cattle on their ranches, on their, become a ranch. No, where are they getting that from? They wasn't getting that from their salaries. Shit, that's obvious what was going on. The corruption was so open, so I was so, I mean, you had to be an idiot not to know what was going on. That's what was going on then. And we did everything we could to stop it.
The standoff escalated into sporadic gun battles before ending after 71 days. The standoff was over, but tension between AIM and law enforcement continued. In June 1975, two FBI agents and one AIM activist were killed in an encounter near an AIM campsite. Peltier was one of three AIM members charged in the agents' deaths. The two others were tried first and acquitted after arguing that they acted in self-defense. But Peltier was later convicted and sentenced to two consecutive life terms, a trial and outcome many legal scholars have since questioned. Peltier insists that he didn't kill the FBI agents, even after multiple appeals, even with the support from his former lead prosecutor, his convictions have never been overturned.
To have to endure so many setbacks and remain in prison must have been pretty daunting for you. Who did you pray to? What gave you strength?
Just knowing that everything that we were saying was the truth, knowing that it was still going on. It was still illegal for a white man to be prosecuted for committing a crime on a reservation. That law wasn't changed. That law was still happening back in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Probably even today, I don't know. These things still existed. I took an oath to sacrifice my life for the people. I'm a sun dancer. I took that oath as a sun dancer. I would die for the people if I had to, but I was not going to turn against my people. So I stayed defiant all the 49 years plus in prison.
And you say even today.
And today, you hear me now.
You're not going to be a snitch.
I ain't changed. I get pissed every time I think about this shit. Fucking angers me, you know. Now I become a voice. I'm going to speak it out. I'm going to speak out, man. I'm going to tell you. And I'm angry. Why don't we talk more about what they did to us? You know, come on, man. You know, I want the world to know. God damn, they enslaved us, killed us, massacred us. Raped our children, enslaved our children, used to brand them on the face. So the kids would be traumatized all the rest of their lives as they grow up. You know, that trauma has traumatized the shit out of them. Why can't we talk about that? I'm not going to forget. We're not forgetting. We've been fighting this for 500 years, my friend. 500 years we've been trying to expose this.
As I wrap this up, you know, some questions about, you know, what you see in America today.
I believe from growing up in these type of incidents and situations or whatever you want to call them, I believe that if we don't stop what's going on right now, we're going to have a dictatorship here. We've seen Nixon and all them. They tried the same damn thing. So I lived through that stuff, and I see it happening again. I seen this movie before. I lived this movie before.
I wanted you to talk about the next generation. Do you think that they're facing similar hurdles?
I listen to some of the younger people. They're more radical than we are. They fought hard. They tried to expose the government for what they're doing, and they're still here. So am I. I'm still here. And I will continue to speak out about them. I'm not advocating violence. I want this well known right now. I'm not advocating violence, but I'm advocating defense. We have a right to defend ourselves. We have a right as a people to live free. There's more of us than them. And we're around the world. We are around the world. America's not the only place this is happening here. And there's more of us. We will defeat them. I'm still as fired up as I ever will, and I'm sure I will die that way.
That was an extended interview with Leonard Peltier, the recently commuted Indigenous rights activist speaking from his home on the Turtle Mountain Reservation. Fred DeSam Lazaro is our director and correspondent, and I'm Simeon Lancaster, producer and media editor. This is Undertold Verbatim. You can find more Undertold Verbatim episodes and our entire library of Undertold news reports from around the world at undertoldstories.org.